From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Coming up later this hour, find out all about this weekend's ArtSpire events in downtown La Crosse, including our conversation with the violin-playing brothers known as B-Twins. But first, we're kicking off an occasional series, a new series right here on Newsmakers, that we're calling Meet the Mayor. As the title might belie, it's an opportunity to talk to our local mayors in the surrounding area, including today's guest who joins us from the city of Onalaska, where she is the mayor. It's Kim Smith. Mayor Smith, welcome to Newsmakers.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, I have visited and lived in Onalaska at various points throughout my life, and there's a lot going on in your city, and yet in a lot of ways it maintains that Western Wisconsin small town feel right along the river. So talk to me about what it's like to be the mayor of Onalaska.
Sure. Well, I became the mayor of Onalaska in December of 2019 when I was appointed to fill out that role. I decided to put my hat in the ring and I became elected on April of 2020. So I'm about halfway through my 4-year term. I grew up in Onalaska. I'm a hometown girl. I've lived here my whole life, basically. So I have a lot of roots in this community, a lot of family members and longtime friends. Growing up here, I just love the proximity to the bluffland and the hiking and just the beauty of it all. And also the water, enjoying water sports and a lot of outdoor activities. And I think Onalaska is situated in such a perfect location because we're close to everything, and yet we still have, you know, the blufflands and the water so close also. So I can't imagine a better place to live than Onalaska.
So as mayor, you talked about taking office in April of 2020, your first full term in April of 2020. So what are your priorities that you either have been working on or that you're hoping to work on?
Well, when I approached this, I had been involved in local government for a long time. I was first elected to the Onalaska Common Council in 2004. And so I've served multiple terms as alderman, which I think was a really good preparation for becoming the mayor, having a deep understanding of local government and all the people involved and organizations, because, you know, our government is about people and relationships, and we want to be building community. But I think one of the things that I knew going into it is that we needed to really focus on regionalization on many levels. For one thing, it can create efficiencies for our taxpayers, but it's just a better way of living and being to break down some of those barriers. And so one of the first things that I got to work on when I was elected mayor is trying to get the sewer agreement negotiated with the city of La Crosse. In Onalaska, we don't have our own wastewater treatment plant. We contract with the city of La Crosse for that service, and we had actually been unable to come to an agreement with the prior administrations. And so that was like priority number one. And it didn't take too long once Mitch Reynolds got into office. I think he and I had some really good conversations, and we were able to get an agreement that was mutually beneficial for everyone in our community.
You've got the wastewater treatment agreement there. You talked about that as part of your regionalization strategy. Other agreements exist with different communities around. I think La Crosse and Holman cooperate on a fire department basis. Are there other areas that you think Onalaska and La Crosse, or Onalaska and other local partners, could work together?
Right. Well, I mean, that we already are working together in so many ways. I mean, one example, when we think about economic development with, you know, current things going on with the economy, it makes us even more conscious of how important it is to have a strong local economy. And one of the ways that we are working toward that is we are a member of LADCO, the La Crosse Area Development Corporation. And also, I'm on the Clee Region Business Center, the board. And so working to promote small business development in our region, I think that that is, you know, part of, you know, the American dream, is being able to have a business and help these new entrepreneurs with great ideas make that become a reality. That's something that I personally and as mayor am working on to try to make sure that we're promoting that in our community for small business.
I'm oversimplifying, but there's almost like two different components to Onalaska. There's the older part of town, heavily residential part of town, and then there's, you know, out past the mall where there's just tons and tons of retail and just a huge amount of retail and a lot of other businesses going on. As mayor, how do you balance the concerns that come from residents, people who live there, people who are your constituents, but also businesses that bring a lot of revenue into your town?
Well, I mean, the foundation of that is just having good codes and ordinances in our town so that people have it's a defined set way that things need to develop in an organized manner, and we have the same rules that are consistent across the board so people can know what their expectations are. For example, if they're living in a residential area that is a true residential area, they have the expectation that all of a sudden a big business isn't going to go right up next to them. But we do have transitional areas where a mixed use is allowed. But one of the great things about Onalaska is our proximity to the interstates. Interstate 90 coming right through our community and having the exits there and the major highways just makes it a natural place for there to be a retail center, which in turn draws people to our community. But in addition to that, we have a lot of recreational type things going on. For example, our Omni Center is located up on the north side of town. I mean, that is the bookings on there are just solid. We have such a variety. We have most people know that we have two sheets of ice up there for the hockey tournaments, but we have other events there as well, conventions, bass fishing tournaments we host, multiple sporting events. Earlier this year, we had one of the largest gymnastic meets in the state was held there. So we're just really drawing in a lot of tourism for our activities that we have in addition to the retail.
One of the issues that we've talked about on Newsmakers in relation to the city of La Crosse is the amount of resources that city spends on social services related to the homeless. And when we were talking to Mayor Reynolds about that, one of the ideas that he did not reject was that some of the surrounding cities may not have to deal with that issue as much because the social services that exist in La Crosse draw that population to that sort of central location. Are there ways that your city or other surrounding cities could play a role in solutions to a problem like that, realizing that your city hasn't had to, that there might be reasons that your city hasn't had to face that as head on as a place like La Crosse has?
Right. Well, and part of the reason for that is in a community of our size in our local government, we don't even have any capacity for social services. Us and the smaller communities, the townships, rely on the county to provide countywide social services. So, you know, from our perspective, that's where that support needs to come from. Not that we try to be as supportive as we can, but that isn't our function. We don't have a social services section of the city of Onalaska government or the town of Madary or the town of Onalaska.
Another thing, I don't know how much it affects the day-to-day aspect of your job, but another thing that you can be very proud of is that you're the first woman who's been elected as the mayor of Onalaska. In 2022, I mean, it seems interesting that's noteworthy, and yet a lot of our surrounding communities have yet to elect a woman to the position of mayor. What's that like to stand out in that way?
Well, I think that the reason there aren't more women in this position is because you have to, or similar positions, you know, you have to make some choices along the way. And I've been fortunate that I do have a lot of support from my husband, and I do have a lot of family here to help me. So when I was younger and I was serving on council, I had people that would help me with my kids and, you know, organizing my household and all the things that you would have to do to be able to, you know, I have always had full-time professional employment, and then you have children and you're running your house. And, at, you know, most people would say, I'm not going to be an older person on top of all of that. You know, so they would never get to the point where they have all the years of experience being involved in local government where they would actually be qualified to be the mayor. I'm just thankful for my family's support.
So another thing that that you've got going on in Onalaska is the Citizens Academy. Tell me about this academy and what we're teaching our citizens.
Well, thank you for asking. The Onalaska Informed Citizens Academy, which we call O-Academy for short, was an idea that I had to give people an opportunity to learn more about their local government. It seemed like there was a lot of misinformation in the media and elsewhere where people didn't understand the details behind, for example, voting and how their votes were processed and counted into the bigger picture. So we started it last fall and did kind of a more comprehensive series of sessions about local government, and in doing that, we found the two most popular ones were the fire department and the police department. So this spring, we're bringing it back, and in May, this previous May, we had a session on the fire department where just for one evening, citizens could come and learn more about the fire department. Of course, they got to see all the fire trucks, but beyond that, we got to put out fires using a fire extinguisher. We got to see how the jaws of life were used to open the cars to get people out. We actually got to break the windows on the car, which was pretty fun. Sometimes people don't realize that most of the time when the fire department goes out to respond to calls, it is for medical and not for a fire. It's not very often that we have fires as compared to medical calls. So we learned a lot about that. But coming up on July 14th from 4 to 6 p.m., we will be featuring our police department. So if anybody would like to come and learn more about the Onalaska Police Department, you do not need to be a resident. The easiest way to do it is to look at the Onalaska Park and Rec Facebook page where we have a sign-up. There should be a Facebook sign-up under the police department Facebook. Otherwise, you know what, you can just give me a call or an email. The mayor of Onalaska is not hard to find contact information for.
I know it's getting to be the busy time of summer. Everybody's got things going on. There was a summer music series that kicked off this week at Dash Park in Onalaska. What else is going on in town that's fun that people might want to look into this summer?
Well, definitely you don't want to miss the Great River Sound. That was pretty exciting last night with the General Lee showing up in town, and that's every Tuesday throughout the summer. A couple other things we have, well, you may not know, we just had a new animal hospital open on 12th Avenue, which is much needed with increased pets. I guess COVID caused an increase in pets, and so that's nice. Just all kinds of sporting activities. One thing is the Omni Center and our Park and Rec are hosting a summer camp, which is like a summer daycare program up at the Omni Center. Kind of takes advantage of that facility and all it has to offer. I mean, with the Aquatic Center is just right across the way. So we're giving it a shot to do some summer camps, which I'm sure the community appreciates because there's always a demand for the kiddos to have fun things to do to keep them busy in the summer, and this will be a good one.
And where can people find out more information about what's going on?
Definitely at our website, cityofonalaska.org. You can check it out there. We have a calendar. Otherwise, if it's Omni Center specific, they have their own website as well, and, you know, there's always Facebook.
Onalaska Mayor Kim Smith has been our guest today. Thanks a lot, Mayor Smith. I appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
So what do you want us to ask your mayor? You can email us anytime through the week, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Coming up, find out all about this weekend's ArtSpire events in downtown La Crosse, including our conversation with the violin-playing brothers known as B-Twins. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio in La Crosse, and I'm joined by Allison Krisch today, who is the Assistant Director of the Pump House, and we are talking about ArtSpire, which is a really cool event that happens at the Pump House and surrounding area in La Crosse, and is coming up this Saturday. Allison, welcome to Newsmakers.
Hello, thank you for having me. Great
now,
to be here.
It's wonderful to have you, and I'll admit, last year is my first time attending ArtSpire because I lived out of town for a long time, even though I'm from La Crosse, and a couple of years ago I moved back, but then, you know, COVID happened, and ArtSpire didn't, of course, and then last year it was back, and it was great, and I've heard that this year is going to be even bigger and better. So for the uninitiated, talk about ArtSpire and kind of what it is and how it functions in the arts community here in the Cooley region.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
ArtSpire is actually a two-day, completely free festival celebrating the arts in downtown La Crosse, outside of the Pump House. So
a correction right away. I said Saturday. It is Friday and Saturday, isn't it?
But really, last year, it was one day, and
okay.
We were happy to have it one day. It was Saturday. So we're back to the two-day format. Friday, June 10th, it starts at 6 p.m. with Bill Miller, and the Ho-Chunk Singers and Dancers are at 7, and then Cloud Cult performs at 8. We have food trucks and beer garden back on Friday. So everything on Friday is from 5 to 10. And then on Saturday, it runs 10 a.m. until 10 p.m., and many different things going on Saturday. Art fair and sale like we had last year, like you experienced, from 10 until 5. We have 45 artists, all from, 4 to 5 different states. It's not just regional. It's like we have artists from Michigan and Iowa and Nebraska and Illinois and Wisconsin, Minnesota. So that's really great. That runs from 10 until 5. At that same time, interactive arts are back, and that's something that we didn't have last year. So we are partnering with about 10 to 12 nonprofits, and each nonprofit is doing an interactive art in their booth. So something that's family friendly, something that's kid friendly. As an example, Habitat for Humanity is doing an art project out of recycled fan blades for your ceiling fan.
Recycled ceiling fan blades can become art.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Repurpose. We love the earth. So that's just an example. Cooley Kidscape, another example. They are a business on Main Street in downtown La Crosse. Occupational therapist owns it. And they were taking toilet paper rolls and recycling them into bird feeders. So something that you can make on premise, but bring home.
So how many vendors did you say are going to be there? The artists from all these different
45
states?
45 artists.
And they represent all kinds of different arts, but tell people about the products that they, I mean, it's a pretty expected list, but it's just an astonishing list. How many different products these artists are responsible for making all by hand through their own creativity.
Exactly. I mean, we have painters, but we have painters in different mediums, and we have drawers. We have wood whittlers that turn it into a spoon or, you know, a wood piece of art for your wall. A printmaker, Shua, who will actually print the t-shirts right in front of you. So you see the process and then you get to take your shirt home. Jewelers of all different mediums with stones and silver and leather. Beading. I know I'm missing something. Fiber, macrame, but also we have one fiber artist whose the wool comes from the sheep on her farm.
Oh, wow.
And then she, Yes. And then she makes it into shawls or rugs. So you get to meet all of these artists, ask them questions about their art, and then purchase and support them.
Purchasing and supporting is a big part of what's going on, because in the era of the big box store, a lot of people, a lot of small providers from our local economy kind of get lost in that. Talk about how important not just ArtsBuyer, but all these different opportunities that we have to support local arts really are vital in keeping our local economy going.
Well, they're our neighbors, first and foremost. And the money that they spend is also in our community. So it really does stay in our community and circle amongst it. I always think, too, we have tourists that are coming in to La Crosse to buy these artists' work. So that is powerful as well, as far as tourism and the arts.
I'm interested in all the different entertainment that's going to be going on starting on Friday and going throughout the day Saturday. And it's not just one genre. Forget about musical genre. It's not even all music. So
I know it's
talk
pretty
about what's going to be going
extensive.
on stage.
We have dancers, we have performers, and we have live music. So, INE Dance Company, La Crosse Dance Center. We also have Dunia Drum Group, which is an African American drum and dance group coming down from Minneapolis. That's dance. La Crosse Community Theater, they're going to do a performance of Lizzie, which opens this weekend as well, and Seussical Junior. And we have live music. The list is so long, and my brain is like, Charlie Boy, they're actually five youth, female singer, four boys. And that's pretty powerful because kids their age, I think, 16-year-olds, they'll be able to see themselves on stage and think, I can do that too.
Yeah, for sure.
Derek, I am not very good at pronouncing his name. But he is from Old Soul Society, so he will be performing as well. We have Alex Toast, who plays the guitar and does this instrumental guitar strumming. Big thing, Bill Miller is actually doing a Native American flute workshop. That's the only event that's happening inside the pump house in the theater, and that's at 2 o'clock, but that's free.
And that's at 2 o'clock on Saturday.
On Saturday.
And Bill is among the performers on Friday night, right?
Correct.
Okay. So
Doubleheader Bill Miller.
yeah, so you can learn from him at the workshop on Saturday and see him perform on Friday. That's really amazing. I mean, just the whole lineup is amazing, but you've got pretty much a lacrosse icon in Bill Miller on Friday night.
Yeah.
And then also on Friday night, the amazingly popular band Cloud Cult.
I can't even contain my excitement, honestly. Yeah, we're pretty excited. They have a new album out, Metamorphosis. So
And how would you for people who aren't familiar with Cloud Cult, how would you describe their music?
Oh my goodness. You put me on the spot.
Well,
I
that's what
mean,
I
they
do. That's kind of my job.
they I get it. Thank you. Respect. They have been compared to Arcade Fire. It is alternative, mixed with a little bit of rock, mixed with a little bit of indie. They have cello and violin and guitar and drum and painters that paint during their performance. So,
During the actual performance, people are
yes,
painting.
two painters on stage with them.
Oh, wow. And they
Yes,
did
part of the
that.
group.
That's just part of what goes on at Cloud Cult.
Exactly.
That's amazing. And what time do they take the stage? Well, assuming everything runs on time, which it always
Thank you.
does at concert events, right?
Oh, yes, live stage, live theater, nothing ever goes wrong.
Yeah.
8 p.m. Friday night
8 p.m.
is Cloud
Friday.
Cult.
Okay. And Saturday, you mentioned a couple of the people that are going to be there on Saturday. If is
Yes.
who would you consider to be one or two of that, like the headliners on Saturday?
Oh gosh, if we all work together, we all raise up together.
That's right.
I didn't mention the Lavender Project.
Okay.
They're pretty great. They mix rap and alternative. And Cass Magpie is right on before the Lavender Project. And I haven't mentioned B-Twins. They are our headliner on Saturday night.
Spoiler alert, they're coming up next on Newsmakers.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Their story is so amazing. When I heard it, we just had to bring them to ArtSpire.
How did you first hear about them?
Well, Toni Asher, executive director, she heard about them, and that was through her network of other theaters, knowing what's going on in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. They're from Iowa, so I'm sure that she had connected with a theater down there. All theaters kind of talk to each other.
That's right.
Coming through.
It's a huge great act. It's a huge community, but it's a small community in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you said that there's going to be food available. And of course, since you mentioned that, I have not stopped thinking about it because that's where my life centers. What food trucks are going to be there?
Respect.
Yes. Right.
We are so happy to have food trucks back. They're going to be here on Friday from 5 to 10 and then Saturday from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. Oh, my goodness. I'm pretty excited about Hope Restores Black Student Leaders. Their Birrio Taco fundraiser is going to be here Friday and Saturday, and that's a fundraiser for them. Monkey Business Food Truck, Ice Cold Refreshments, Sparky's Spit is out of just south of us. They're new to me. Muy Caliente Taco Bros is actually new as well, and they're from Arcadia. I know I'm missing someone. Apothic is going to be here Friday only. And Five Star Egg Rolls.
Oh, wow. So in addition to...
I'm sorry if I'm forgetting anyone.
Well, you know, it's just more reason to show up to see what we might be missing here in our conversation.
Thank you.
But if we were speaking earlier about the impact of local handcrafted items by artists who actually, you know, do this for a living and to sustain their communities. The food trucks, no different. Every one of them that you mentioned is like either a local business or a local nonprofit behind it.
Exactly. There's a lot of love in that food.
Yeah.
Might as well eat it all.
It's amazing. So, tell me where people need to go or where they can go to find more information about ArtSpire, which is coming up. This will air Friday morning, so it's coming up tonight and tomorrow.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
ArtSpire.thepumphouse.org. We have music and performances listed there, the Fine Art Fair and Sale, Interactive Arts, Inspired by Lacrosse, actually is a public art project that we're going to announce the winners on Saturday. We're still taking volunteers. Many hands make light work, so
okay.
You can sign up there. And, of course, our sponsors. We couldn't do it without our generous sponsors.
The winners of tell me what the contest is that is going to be revealed, the winners of which are going to be revealed?
Yes. Inspired by Lacrosse is a public art project where the winners, their art gets to be hung in City Hall for a year. And there's usually three artists that are selected.
Okay.
They each win $200 and then their art hangs at City Hall. But then afterwards they can sell the art as well.
So are these
City of Lacrosse Arts Board?
Oh, okay. City of Lacrosse Arts Board sponsors that, and so this is just people who have submitted works during a period of time. And
exactly.
Are there parameters other than it has to be? Is it like drawings or paintings of a thing in lacrosse, or how is the work lacrosse inspired?
It depends on the art and
okay.
the artist and how they're inspired. But yes, I mean, many different mediums of art, paintings and drawings and fiber and wood.
Well, all the information is at artspire.pumphouse.org?
Correct.
All right. Allison Krish is assistant director of the Pump House. And Allison, we'll see you this weekend at ArtSpire.
See you this weekend. Thank you so much, Ezra. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, certainly. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like more information on this event or any other program that we have aired, you can find them all on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. WPR.org/newsmakers. As I said before, B-Twins will be here next on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Everything you fear is here and it's holding you up. It just keeps holding you up. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studios. A violin-playing set of identical twins will be among the musicians headlining this weekend's Art Spire in downtown La Crosse. B Twins consists of brothers Walter and Wagner Caldas, born in Brazil, but now hailing from nearby Iowa. B Twins are, of course, joining me right now to talk about their music, and I couldn't be more pleased. Guys, welcome to Newsmakers.
Hello!
Yes, I love the intro, man. It made it sound super important.
Well,
I love it.
Well, you are super important. You're going to be playing in La Crosse after all.
You better believe. We are super excited to come and hang out with you guys.
Well, that's who you've mostly heard speaking is Wagner, and Walter is also here with us. I want to ask you, we'll start with you, Wagner. When did you guys start learning music?
So like you said at the beginning, we are from Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We start playing at the age of 11, which is kind of old compared to the people here in the United States. They start way earlier than that, 4 or 5 years old. So at 11, we started. And the reason why we started learning how to play the violin was because our dad is a violin maker, but he cannot play the instrument to save his life. So he needed somebody to that know how to play, so we could try his instrument, and that's how we started the music. We were literally forced to learn how to play the violin, so we could try his instrument.
So Walter, when you were first learning how to play, did you learn at school, or did you take lessons privately from an instructor?
Yeah, he said that we are from Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. What a lot of people don't know is that we are from the slums of Rio de Janeiro. And we didn't have money to pay for lessons. So what happened, my dad made a trade with the lady from our conservatory, music conservatory. And the trade out was he would fix the instrument of her students if she would give us lessons for free. So we actually started learning the music conservatory for free.
Did you, your father's a violin maker. Did you ever learn that side of the craft or have any interest in making the instruments?
No. He was lucky enough that we learned how to play the violin.
Yeah,
we never learned how
that. It's very complex.
Yeah.
So how long have you been playing? You started when you were 11, and you must have been playing for quite some years now.
Yeah, we have been playing for a while now. However, when we started, because we didn't like it at all, we were 11, growing up in the slums of Brazil, violin was totally, didn't fit that reality, you know? And so it took us like a good 4 years for us to start enjoying and have a good grip on the instrument. So after that, by that, we were what, 15?
15, 16.
And then we start actually enjoying how to play. And we
mostly because we figure out that we could play other songs rather than classical, like pop music. So that start brightening our interest for the instrument. Once we figure out that we could learn other songs.
Mm-hmm. So when you first learned, you were learning, the more traditional literature,
and classical, and
that wasn't as interesting to you. Twinkle Variations only goes so far, huh?
Yeah. It was like, because we were doing all the classical pieces, was very hard. Like we had to read music and stay within the genre and the period. Like if it was Baroque or whatever, medieval.
And then the other thing is that was hard for us, we would go back home to the slums and try to play for friends, and nobody could relate because that was not a reality in the where we grew up. You know, classical music was not a thing.
Well, it's a huge cultural difference, because most of the music that is written, that is at least perceived as being proper violin music, comes from Europe, and you're in Brazil,
right there,
and not only in Brazil, but you're in a pretty impoverished part of the world where this music that's written by and for privileged people doesn't really relate to anything that's going on in your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What was
but we found a way. We start playing pop and getting a lot of attention.
I was going to say, when did you first sort of listen to the violin and say, hey, I bet we can do something else with this?
Yeah, that happened with the fact that, like, every time we would play for a friend, they had no idea what we were playing. It sounded super boring for them. So we start picking up songs that they knew. And that's when they were like, oh, my God, this is super awesome. This is super awesome. So after that, after we broke into that, a lot of our friends start in our neighborhood, start taking violin lessons. And we even started an orchestra there.
So an orchestra geared toward younger people or?
Yeah, younger people from the slums. Yeah.
Okay. What kind of music did the orchestra play?
We did a mix of classical baroque and pop.
Okay.
Brazilian popular music. Yeah, a lot of Brazilian.
When did you really? You said it was maybe 15 years old or so when you started to really have fun with the violin. When did you start to realize that this was something that you could actually do professionally?
When people start paying, like, oh, so there is money here. And it was such a nice combination because now we are having fun and making a little bit of money. And not only that, we are getting the chance to see places in Brazil that a lot of our friends is still haven't seen, you know? So that world was super interesting for us. We are making money, traveling, and still having fun with what we are doing. So that's how we became what we are.
Win.
Yeah.
When did you move to the U.S.?
We moved to the U.S. at the end of 2017. And the way we got here was, again, we were playing a show in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, right in Copacabana. Very famous place in Brazil.
No, 2007.
I'm sorry. The end of 2007, we played this show in Copacabana. There was two ladies there, and one of them spoke English, and the other one spoke Portuguese. And the one who spoke Portuguese was translating for the lady that spoke English. And the lady asked us to give an interview after the show. We gave the interview. The interview aired on NPR radio. Somebody in Iowa listened to the radio and invited us to come here to play one show.
One song.
We came from Brazil to Iowa to play one song. From that one song, we got a scholarship to study music at UNI, University of Northern Iowa, in Cedar Falls, Iowa. And that's how we ended up here.
So you studied at university. That must have taken you back, at least somewhat back into that classical side of music.
Yeah. Even more.
Were you my degree's in music as well? I know what you're talking about.
Were you
at that point up to the challenge and able to enjoy the music a little bit more than you did when you were younger children?
Not at all.
It was just hard work. We have to do it.
You were super hard. Yeah.
We did like all types of like opera, like super serious stuff.
Yeah,
so it was very hard on us.
Yeah. But that was also very helpful because that was during that period was when we were creating the B-Twins. Yeah. So after we were done with that, we were all in with B-Twins and now it's a blast.
So how did you start to find the people I've heard some of your music and there's a lot of production value in your music. I mean, it's not just two guys sitting there playing the fiddle. There's a lot going on. How did you find the people that you work with to create the music that you create and have all of the production and all of the tracks and all of the electronic elements and everything?
Yeah, so funny you're saying this. By the way, thanks for listening to our music. Hey. And so the production, we start our first real band started here because in college, while we were in college, we had no idea how to even plug an instrument because we had been playing acoustic violin forever. You don't need cables or any type of amplification, you know? So we start the band while we were in college with a bass and a drummer. That was the upbringing of where we are today. We learned a lot with those guys and with our first band. And yeah, that band, that experimental project took us all over the United States. People loved it. And then we just found ourselves in that, like, this is what we are going to do there. So throughout, like, the past 8 years, we have been experimenting with different musicians, different producers. And now since COVID, we are the ones creating everything. We are recording, we are shooting our videos, we are writing our songs, we are producing our songs, everything. We do everything
in-house,
in the house.
So you're, Walter, you said in-house you're doing it. Is, how has that transition been from doing a lot of, like, cover music and finding a way to incorporate your violins into music, pop music that already exists, to finding your own sound and finding your own voice for these instruments that are not always associated with popular music?
Yeah, we've been doing this for so long now, that playing pop music, that the transition was pretty smooth about start doing, writing your own songs. And it's like, okay, you've been doing this a while, we can do it. And then we start now most of the songs you're going to see on Spotify is us, like, our feelings, our point of view in life. A lot of the time we write about happiness and brighten your soul. And so it's a lot of our point of view in life. And we felt that, okay, we are ready to show who we are.
You have come from a background where a neighborhood where there was a lot of poverty. You talked about growing up in the slums in Rio de Janeiro, all the way to Iowa, where there's lots of corn, and traveling all over the United States and seeing all different sides of life, and a lot of that because of your music and your abilities. And yet you've talked about, you know, the academic side of music being somewhat hard and really difficult to learn, as it certainly is. How important is access to musical education for young people? And maybe a side question from that, you know, how do you think music teachers should be maybe more willing to accept versions of pop music in music education curriculum rather than focusing on, you know, the Bach and Beethoven and so much?
Yeah, so the music industry and music itself is changing actually pretty quick now. If you pay attention, there is a lot of people using the violin on a non-traditional way. You know, there is a lot of videos out there of people doing using the violin the same way we do, playing pop music, playing rock. So I would think that nowadays it's a little bit easier for teachers to understand the other side of a classical instrument, you know, which is happening now with the violin. And to add to that, classical music was very difficult for us. Other people may not think that, you know, and we love it. It taught us a lot, the whole theory behind the music, you know, it helped us a lot. It was just not our cup of tea. We like action. We like jumping and playing and having fun, the whole deal, you know. The sitting down and reading every single time you play.
They're very academical, very serious.
Very serious.
Like, there is no, like, room for fun. Like, it's the theory, it's the way that has to be played, and you cannot change because the period that was written, you gotta expose that period and follow the rules. A lot of rules, you know. But your question was very good, and we have been there a lot where teachers take us to their school to talk to their students, to motivate them because they are falling, you know, they're lacking motivation toward the music lessons. And we explained to the teachers also that it's very important to make it fun and
make
and
it fun, yeah.
Give them a break and teach them something that they will be super excited to show their parents, you know, to take a little bit from the classical and go back and make even the classical fun.
There is this, and look, respect to people who can do classical music and do it really well, quote unquote, properly. But like, do you think that it would be more accessible if people weren't so territorial about it? If people were more willing to listen to, I mean, because if you take a popular song, I mean, if you take a song by an artist that's currently on the radio, and you say, hey, listen to what I did with this song, people get all excited about it. Whereas if you say, hey, look what I did to Mozart, they're going to go, why did you do that to Mozart? You know, do you think it'd be more accessible if people were more open to that?
Yes. I have the answer for that. People at your car, at your home, listen to this answer. This is going to be amazing. So I was a violin teacher for 7 years while I was in Brazil. I taught for 7 years and also in poverty place, very poor place. And because of the way I learned, I was able to understand what my students want and deliver to that at the point that my students in Brazil graduated college before me with violin. And the reason why I think it's because I was able to cater to them what they like it. When we first got there with the violin, it was a super shock, including the parents. The parents didn't want the kids to learn how to play the instrument because of the stereotype. But then I used to play to show them, to convince them that it would be a good idea. I used to play for them all the songs that were playing on the radio in Brazil. I check this one out, and then I would play. Hey, do you know this one? Justin Bieber. I would play some Justin Bieber for them. They, oh, my goodness. They would get super excited. So now they would want to come to the lesson to learn how to play that so they could play for their friends, so they could play for their parents. My technique in Brazil was literally that. I got to get the parents first, and then once I get the parents on board, it's game over. And that's what I used to do with my students. I used to teach them pop music. So by the time they take the instrument home, they play what their parents know. And then they would, oh, I love that. And they would support the student. So yes, I think that there should be, you should meet in the middle, if nothing else, at least meet in the middle so we can get the student excited.
Yeah, they should be able to have fun with Mozart and Beethoven, you know.
So if people are obviously, you're performing at Artspire on Saturday night here in La Crosse, but you're all over online and elsewhere. Where can people find more information about B-Twins and your music?
Yeah, so we do have a website, btwins.com, B2WINS. And we have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have YouTube. YouTube is booming now because we just started this deal at the beginning of the year where we post one new music video every Tuesday with our songs. Most of the time is original songs. So every Tuesday there is new music coming out fresh out of the box.
And we are also on TikTok.
And on TikTok, believe it or not. So now, La Crosse, we are super excited to come and play for you because I believe this is our first time coming to La Crosse. We have been all over the country but La Crosse.
Well, you're not going to want to go anywhere else once you come here, so get ready for that.
I love it. Let's go La Crosse.
Walter and Wagner Caldas are B-Twins, and that's, if you want to look it up online, as Wagner said, that's styled the letter B, the number 2, W-I-N-S. Look for them online, and then, of course, you can see them at Artspire on Saturday. When this airs, that'll be tomorrow here in downtown La Crosse. Walter, Wagner, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, my friend.
That was awesome.
Yes, big hug to you, okay?
Thank you. Good to be with you. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's how you can listen to our program every week. We're on Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. Friday night at 7, we're on NPR News and Music 88.9. And we're always online at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our producer is Dawn Jewell. I'm Ezra Wall. Join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.